This sugya is a very hard sugya, mainly because it's based on Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi by nature is very hard to understand. As to learn the Rabbeinu Hananel, he just quoted Yerushalmi, and there are probably 8 different ways to understand this Yerushalmi. What was the question? What was the answer? What does the word antler even mean? So a lot of ambiguity here, and so that made it very difficult. Yerushalmi is just hard to learn Yerushalmi. It has a conversation, and then it just stops the conversation and goes on to a new conversation and might ask a question and might not really care about the answer and move on to another conversation. It's very, very hard to learn the Yerushalmi. You can have 8 different pshatim in the Yerushalmi. Tosfos himself sometimes goes to Yerushalmi and has many, many different pshatim. So that's what makes it difficult. So this sugya is more of a halacha sugya, not halacha lamaisa. It shouldn't be halacha lamaisa, but it's more just straightforward as opposed to a lamdisha discussion. But it's important, this is a very important sugya for the discussion of what's called a toin. The toin is no one should have to ever go to Beis Din, but in Beis Din, so you have the Bali Dinim, you have the Dayanim, and many times if the Bal Din, they'll have a toin, which is a lawyer. The lawyer represent them. What do I know about law? What do I know about halacha? So you have a very professional, very smart Talmud Chacham, who's your toin. And the Toanim cause a lot of issues in Dinei Torah. This is a known. And the question is whether or not we could accept a toin in a Beis Din. Can he make up his own tainas? Can he represent the Baal Din if he doesn't really know what's going on? They have caused many, many problems. I've heard Rav Asher Weiss says he does accept a toin, but you have to know how to deal with the toin. There's a certain aggressive personality that they have, a certain level of aggression to it. I have never been to a Beis Din. Hopefully I never will be to a Beis Din, but maybe as a dayan would be nice to be a dayan. If I make that point of yadin, it would be very, very nice and chasher, but I think I'm very, very far away from ever being a dayan. But either way, this is the sugya of whether or not a toin is acceptable or not. So let me just break down part of learning sugyas, especially this one, is a very challenging sugya. Organization is very clear. Just as a methodological thing, organization is very, very helpful, how to put things in order. So I just want to lay out the issues first, and then we'll go through the Rishonim together. So the Rishonim here discuss using a toin, we'll call them for now, with respect to a Kohen Gadol, with respect to an Isha, with respect to a Talmud Chacham, and then they spoke about, in general, a Toveya versus a Nitpa. Those are the different categories, whether they could use a Shliach or not. Second issue is, what exactly can be used? What type of shliach? So through the Rishon, we have three different terms being used. There's an antler. I don't even know if that's the right way to pronounce it. Antler, I think it's the only place it appears. I don't think it comes up in the Bavli. It's only the Yerushalmi. An antler, that's one. A marasha, and then a shliach. What seems to be the differences between these three categories is that an antler, I think, if I'm understanding this correctly, is a person who doesn't even represent the Mishalech. He does represent him, but he just comes in and he plays the role as a Baal Din. There's no Shaychus to the Kohen Gadol at all. Kohen Gadol can't make it to the Beis Din. It's not respectable for him. So you have an Adner who represents the Kohen Gadol, but he's not making claims about the Kohen Gadol. He's not making any money off the Kohen Gadol. It's just completely swapping. The king, the Kohen Gadol, can't come. Here's an Adler instead. That's one type, which is, I think, what the Yusham is referring to. The second type is what's called a marasha, which is where you give the shliach some money. He takes a commission. So he becomes a partner. There's a shutfus. Listen, if you make me $1,000, I'll give you a 10% cut. So now he's in on this, and he has a certain ability to make a claim. It's now he's a part of this business deal. And then there's a shliach who is representing the mishaleach. He's not making money off this, but he's still the shliach. There is at least some coordination between the Mishaleach and the Shliach. As opposed to the Adler, he's stepping in. The Kohen Gadol is completely off the map. You can imagine, in the United States of America, if you call the president to the Congress, so the president has to show up. But let's say in England, where there's the Queen. So the Queen doesn't go to a Beis Din. If the Queen did something wrong, I imagine in England or other countries, perhaps, more like I would say Haiti, but places where they have, where there's a dictatorship, the dictators don't go to a Beis Din. In Russia, Vladimir Putin is not going to, he's not taking the Beis Din, even though it's supposedly a democracy there, he's not going to Beis Din. So what he'll do is, if he gets called to Beis Din, he'll send an antler. He's not coordinating them, I'm not going, you deal with it. That's what I think, if I'm understanding correctly, an antler, a marasha, and a shliach.
There's no communication between the Baal and the antler?
That's what it seems like to me. The Kohen Gadol just stays out of it. He needs to go to the Din Torah. Here's the Altlern. You go. And that's what, otherwise I don't see any differences between the Marash and the Shliach and the Altlern. That's my understanding. I could be wrong, though. The Miri tried to figure out which one it was, but it seems that there's a difference. We'll go through the Ramban and we'll see these differences. So they have, again, these three types of Shluchim, the Altlern, Marasha, and Shliach. And we have, in terms of the context of a Kohen Gadol, an Isha, the Talmud Chacham, and then the Toveya and the Nitva. Yeah, yes. Russia is you're giving him a part of the money. He's getting a commission of some sort, so he's in on it. So now he becomes a shutif with the Toveya. Shliach is, he's not making money. He's just representing me. Representing me, I'm telling him, you know, what type of tainus to make for me. He's made more articulate than I am. Maybe he has some ideas, but he's not making any money on this. So those are three types of shluchim. These are different contexts, different arenas that we're discussing. Fine. Now, the third part of the sugya, which again makes it a little tricky, is, what's wrong with using any of these shluchim? What would the problem be? So one challenge the Rishonim deal with is, which with the Yerushalmi address, is shvua. Can a shliach make a shvua? I don't want to discuss that element. There's a chsam sofer, the Behuda talks about a shliach making a shvua, but we're going to assume that a shliach cannot make a shvua for someone. So that's one challenge. How does a shliach, if it comes to shvua, he can't make a shvua. And the second issue is, how do you make a taina? That is not what the Meshalech's taina, not what the Nitva's taina is. You can make up tainas all the time. So there's some level of sheker that's going on here. So these are the challenges of using a shliach. So we have all the different issues together. Now with that in mind, hopefully we could understand this, this sugi a little bit clearer now. So the Gemara here, the Mishnah, Masechas Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Ches, is talking about a Kohen Gadol who's done, he could judge. The done also, you could judge him as well. And on this concept, when the Yerushalmi describes the Kohen Gadol being judged, the Danin also, so it makes a suggestion of, well, why don't you appoint an antler, this person to represent him? And the Gemara says something about a shvua, he might have to take a shvua, and an antler cannot take a shvua. That's a conversation. I just said one approach. There, as I mentioned, there are a few approaches how to read the Yerushalmi, but this is where the discussion comes up. Can you appoint a shliach, a representative of one of the Bali Dinim? That's the question. So now, I think the only lamdasha part of this sugya is the following. Can you use this Yerushalmi as a raya? The Yerushalmi is talking about the Kohen Gadol. Can you use this as a raya to talk about a stam person? A stam toveya, a stam nitva. Can that be applied? Or does this only apply to the Kohen Gadol himself? So if you look at the Ramban, Ramban has this discussion. We're going to go out of order the way it was in the Mar Makomos, but the Ramban writes, if number three, the second paragraph. He says, Ikeman de Amr, they're those who hold, Ibai inish de lo lemesi ledin. If a person does not want to go to Bezdin, for whatever reason it might be, Mati ihu gufe lemnuye shliach be'edim. He could appoint a shliach, lemitan bishvilo be'bezdin, to make claims on his behalf. And they bring a raya, isle raya mi damrin b'yushalmi. Yushalmi teaches that Kohen Gadol, that Dan also asks Yerushalmi, maybe an appointed Alder, Mar says about a Shvua. Whatever the answer is, the Ramban says you could certainly appoint a Shliach, like Kohen Gadol could appoint a Shliach. So why should it be any different to any other person? Now, just another point, as you guys are all young and trying to learn more and more, when rayas are brought, you always have to, in your mind, think, is that a good raya or not a good raya? The ways to learn Ketzos HaChosha and Ketzos the Nesivos oftentimes is what they say. But some of the best assumptions are the rayas. They make big jumps. Ketzos makes a raya from a place you never would have thought of. How do you get from point A to point B? So if you try to figure out what was the assumption, how he jumped to bring a raya here, that's going to be very, very telling. So the Ramban is true as well. Ramban, he brought a raya from a Kohen Gadol to apply it to everywhere else. Who says that Kohen Gadol should apply anywhere else? So that was the very rejection. The rejection, says Ramban, eek the palik, others argue and say, no, ain't a rashaya. A nitba can't use a shliach, he can't use his antler. It was a special heter by the Kohen Gadol. You cover the Kohen Gadol, the cover of the Kohen Gadol. Shelo levzoso, you shouldn't disgrace him. We have to sanctify Kohen Gadol. So for him, the Kohen Gadol sits in his special lishcha, and he sends an antler in his place. But a stam person who was called a bezdin, that can't be true. And he throws out the concerns of taina shel sheker. And we'll get to the women and Tanu Chacham in just a second. But that's, you know, for our sugya, we're learning about the Kohen Gadol this man and the Melech this man. That's basically what we're learning about. So this machlokis is as follows. Can you bring a raya from the Kohen Gadol? The fact that Kohen Gadol could appoint a shliach, is that a good raya for a regular hedya? And this is going to just hopefully lay the groundwork for tomorrow's sugya. We're going to discuss in greater depth. This would be a little foreshadowing that whether or not a Kohen Gadol is viewed as a different person, he's a Kedusha Shem Kohen Gadol, and a completely different level than we are at, or he's like anyone else, he just has a special position as a Kohen Gadol. But as a Gavra, he's a regular hedya. He's a hedya l'chol davar. It just has a different position than we have. So that's, I think, part of this question in the Ramban, whether or not you could use the Kohen Gadol as a raya or not a raya. So the reason why you can use him as a raya, because it says Shelo Levzoso, Dichsevi Kidasho. He's a different level. He's completely, the Kedusha shame that the Kohen Gadol has cannot be touched, cannot be compared to a regular hedyot, and therefore don't bring it as a raya. While the first Man Amar of the Ramban felt that, no, he's no different than us. So that will keep that in mind for tomorrow's sugya. Let's now use this to apply to this general discussion. Can one, in fact, use a antler, a shliach, or a marasha when it comes to a din Torah? So the Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Lamed, talks about Shnei Edim, and the Gemara says that Shnei Edim maybe is referring to Bali Dinim. The Gemara says it can be referring to Bali Dinim. And the Gemara says this line, that an isha lava orcha, it's not the derech eretz, it's not sneis of a woman, to present herself in front of Bezdin. That was a Havamina. So the Gemara says, therefore, we had to bring another Raya. How do we know Shnei is referring to Edim? We have a Gezer Shava. Fine. So in that line, that it's inappropriate for a woman to present herself to a Bezdin, so that means a woman can't be involved in a Din Torah. Let's say she has a store, and someone didn't pay her back money. So she can't be Tover, the customer, because she's a woman? Or the vice versa. A woman stole from me. So I can't call it a Bezdin because it's not sneez first. How does that work? How do you get around that? It's not fair. So Tosafot says, of course, that's not the truth. The emes is that you could have her have a shliach. Tosafot clearly writes, when it comes to an edus, the aid himself must be present. An aid cannot appoint another shliach to say his Haggadah's edus. But when it comes to a din Torah as the Bali Dinim, so there, yuchola limsor tanoseah, she's allowed to have her tainas, have her claims, have her defense, have her arguments passed over to a shliach, and the shliach can represent her in Bezdin. So that's a clear heter of the Tosas. He writes this. And the Ramban quotes also from Rav Halevi, and he quotes from the I think it's Baal Mor, most likely. He usually calls Rav Zachi Halevi, but I assume it's the Baal Mor here. He quotes, Noshim Yakaros Disle Dine. Women, in particular women Chashuvos, so it's a zilzal for them to go to Bezdin, to go to a din Torah. So they're allowed to send a shliach to Bezdin. So he agreed to this Tosfos. And he said that was a practice of the Rif as well. But he didn't write it. He didn't like this raya so much. He didn't appreciate the raya from Tosfos. But in the end of the day, he said something very, very important. He said even though he argued halachically, he argued that he didn't think it's true that women must send the shliach, but maybe the women should represent themselves and show up to Bezdin. He said, nonetheless, kfar hora harav v'kabal mirabo fimasha heid harav. So he says, nonetheless, the hora came from the Rif and others, that this is the Kabbalah, this is the accepted practice. The accepted practice was that women do not go to a Bezdin, and they end up sending a shliach instead. So this is a very important point when it comes to halacha. Halacha sometimes, we have, where halacha states to do something, this is a general point, and we have a mesorah, we have a Kabbalah of a minhag to do otherwise. The example I like to give is a few years ago, there was a situation in a school, somewhere in the New York area, where the girls were wearing tefillin. There were a couple of girls wearing tefillin, that's how they were raised. They grew up in a conservative way, and they went to an Orthodox school and they were wearing tefillin. It became a very big deal, it became a discussion. And the truth is, women are allowed to wear tefillin. Everyone knows famously Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. And if you learn the sugya, women, as long as they have a guf naki, they can wear tefillin. There's a lot of room to prove that women can wear tefillin. But that being said, we have a mesorah that women do not wear tefillin. So there's a concept that Yushalmi quotes. We're doing Yushalmi. Yushalmi in two places writes that a minhag is mevatel halacha. You could come out, learn a sugya, that's great, and you could have a psak halacha, but if that goes against the minhag, your halacha means nothing at all. There's a Gemara in Brachos that says, what bracha Mishnah, machlokas the Mishnah, what bracha do you say in drinking water? You guys all know the answer. What bracha do you say in drinking water? Shaka. Rabbi Tarfon says, no, you know what bracha you say? Bori nefashos, as the bracha Rishona. So Gemara said, what do you do? What's the answer? How do we paskin? Poke, chazi, mai, amadavar. Go out and see what people are doing. What do you mean? When people are doing? Find out what halacha, find out who's right. The answer is, the minag overrides halacha. The minag dictates what the halacha is. So that that applies everywhere. So I remember when this case happened with the young girls wearing tefillin. So there was a young rabbi at the time, and he came out with a psak. He must have been upper 20s or something. So he came out with some psak, and his rebbe from high school, who I know well, he calls him up and says, who the world do you think you are? I said, what do you mean? I got smicha. I have my piskei tshuvos now. I have the ability to do this. And he says, you idiot. Yeah, that's not how it works. Like, you smicha these days don't mean smicha what it meant back then. That's number one. Number two is, even if you came out at the conclusion you could figure out what the halacha may have been, the minog mesorah overrides it. You need to ask a rebbe for these things. It's not just because you have smicha, and because you learned the Mishnah Berurah, because you opened up whatever, say for you could start paskin shilas. That's not how it works. The minog overrides the psak halacha. So that's a very, very important point. Ramban says, even though he felt that women should show up themselves and not appoint a shliach, nonetheless, the Mesorah, the Kabbalah he had from the earlier generations was that we do accept the women to send in the shliach to represent them. Now, continuing on this point here, the Ramban himself, when he just quotes the Man D'Amrim, using the Kohen Gadol as a raya, that if a Kohen Gadol could send the shliach, so too others could, he said in that distinction, that's only true of a Kohen Gadol. But when it comes to the women, you cannot have an antler represent the women. What you can do is you could send the shluchai bezdin to come to the house of the isha and gather her tainas. And this way she doesn't have to be mevazer herself, mezalzer herself in bezdin, but to have an antler or someone represent her and make the tainas, that's unacceptable. But to send the shliach to her house and gather the tainas, that's acceptable. And so too, he says, a Talmud Chacham as well. A Talmud Chacham, which he defines as terasu umunaso, where his whole essence, his whole work, his whole life is to learn, which we don't have that level nowadays. So that person, it's Zile Milsa. For him to go to a Din Torah against Joe Shmo, who made a taina, this guy is Am Haaretz, to call Rosh Shiva to the Bezdin, that's a zilzel. So for him as well, you could send Shulchei Bezdin to the Beis Medrash to get the Rosh Shiva's tainas, and then he could represent the Rosh Shiva. But that's a shliach, not an antler. An antler is a different category. An antler is where there's no conversation, there's no dialogue between the Rosh Hashiva and the antler, and the Isha and the antler. That's not allowed. But to have a shliach to gather the tainas, that's acceptable. An antler would only be allowed by a Kohen Gadol, whereby in the language of the Ramban is that the kidashto is greater than the concerns of tainos shel shefer. Right? Because what would happen if the shliach doesn't gather the tainas? He's making up his own tainas. That's what an antler does. He makes up his own tainas. And it's a chashash. He might not represent the Kohen Gadol properly. Nonetheless, says the Ramban, the Ikeman Damar, that the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol is far more important than the concerns of Tainos Shel Sheker. So what comes out from the Ramban is, then again, a Shliach Shluchei Bezdin to gather Tainas from the Talmud Chacham and to gather Tainas from the Ish is acceptable, but an Antler is only acceptable for the Kohen Gadol. But that's how the Ramban comes out. Yeah. Yeah, it is there to protect their covenant.
There's nothing that it actually provides.
No, because the person is a taina. He's a tovei. He's being tovei from the Kohen Gadol. So how does he get the taina? How does he get what he wants? So the amner goes represent the Kohen Gadol. Now, the act granted,
and
the amner.
No sense of what's going on.
So he has to build up some understanding of the situation. He can't be completely random. He has to have some understanding of the situation to represent him. But he doesn't have to. The dialogue of the Kohen Gadol must be, I guess, minimized to a certain extent, whereby he's not even gathering the tainas. He knows the case. They gather information, and then from that point on, he's representing the Kohen Gadol. But it's not the same here, because clearly Ramban makes a distinction between the shliach, who gathers all the tainas, versus the antler, who doesn't gather the tainas. So, but he has to have some baseline to work with. So that's the understanding. Now, the Rajba, quoted in the Beis Yosef, kind of goes back and forth. You see how tricky this was. The Rajba, in two tshuvas, says the practice was not to appoint this antler, this representative. But then, later on in a different tshuva, the Beis Yosef quotes in the Rajba, that the Nitba can appoint an antler. But if there's a shvua, so then that shvua has to fall back on the Nitba. So again, he's struggling between what to do here. So he says, in the end of the day, that the two concerns are the Tainos Sheker and the Shuvah. So it seems that from the final Shuvah that he wrote, that we're not concerned with the Tainos Sheker. We can't have an Anler represent the Nitba, but a Shuvah must be recited by the Nitba, and then if that happens, then the Nitba has to step in and he must take the Shuvah. That's the Rajba's understanding. Now, the Beis Yosef takes issue with this. He says, okay, so you've dealt with the Shuvah issue. The Shuvah issue is that when the Shuvah comes up, the Nitba takes the Shuvah. But he says, still, there's a problem. Shani Tama, the Ikra Din. Ima Nitva Yimna Marasha. If he points this Marasha, Pamim, Shi Yomadula Shaker. Maybe this Marasha, this representative, will learn to lie. And you're going to accept Taina Shikarim? And he's not Bosh. Why not? If I'm the Nitva, you claim money, you're the bank, I owe you $1,000. So I'm not going to look in your, look you in the face and say, oh, that never happened. I can't deny it. You did a tova for me. You can't look someone in the eyes. Chazaka inadam meiz panav. A person can't be meiz panav. This is what the Sma quotes as well. A person can't be meiz panav in front of a person who did a toa for him. But by point of shliach, the shliach didn't, no toa was done for him. He could lie all he wants. There's no chazaka by the shliach. So the Beis Yosef says, how could you allow this to happen? How could you allow, you're undermining the entire chazaka then. The reason why I'm trusted as a nitzvah when you're claiming money, because I have a chazaka, that I won't lie to a person who did a great tova for me. But once I point to shliach, that chazaka is no longer there, so that loses the nemanos. So Beis Yosef doesn't like this idea. He says, forgetting the issue of a shvuah. But in terms of the tainus sheker, that's another reason why he says not to accept this. And he quotes from the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't make any mention of this antler, the shliach, the marasha at all. He simply says that dayanim must hear directly from the edim, and even rather from the dayanim, bali dinim rather, unless there's a maturgamon, only from a maturgamon translator if he actually understands the language of the bali dinim. I mean, let's say the bali dinim speaks Spanish, but they're using the turgamon to explain in English, the translator. That's only acceptable if the bali dinim understands Spanish as well. They have to understand to make sure that the turgamon's not making anything up. But to have a shliach, to have anybody else, the Rambam doesn't accept it at all. Bain because of the shua concerns, bain because of the tainus shekel concerns, that's how Rambam comes out. So let's get to bottom line. I told you, it's a little confusing. If you saw the Meiri also was very confusing. He had like six different pshatim, taveya versus the nitva, the shliach, the shua, the shekel. He had all the things we said are all found in the Meiri. I just don't want to go through all right now because it does get very, very confusing. I'll just make one more chilek here. Actually, we'll see the smart for this chilek. Let's just try to get all the confusion. Let's just get bottom line, what are we paskin like? We'll do the Shulchan Aruch, the Sma, and the Aruch HaShulchan, and I'll finish off with hopefully a couple interesting stories about Halacha and Kabbalah. Not Kabbalah, but like Misara. So look at number 6 for bottom line. Shulchan Aruch writes, HaNitva Einu Yachal Limnos Marasha. A Nitva, which is the defendant, if I'm being claimed money from, banks claiming $1,000 from me, I'm the Nitva. Einu yachal limnos marasha. I cannot appoint a marasha. Sheyolav yavo lebezdin v'yashivu ba'adu latoveya, to respond, to make arguments, to defend me. That's not allowed. Hu yoshabi vesa, I'm going to sit home, and I'll send a lawyer in my stead. That's not allowed. V'nashim yikaras, if the women who are very chashiv, which they always stay in the house, shein kvodin lavo lebezdin, it's inappropriate for them to show up to bezdin, it's beneath their kavod. So for them, there's a special heter. Mishagrin lehen sofrei dayanim v'yitanu b'fneim. Bezdin could send some shluchim, and they could gather her thoughts, gather her arguments, and they could write it down and present it in Bezdin. That's a special heter for the nashim. And kayoti bezeh, similar to that, osim didal talmud chacham shetarasu munaso, do the same thing, because zilei bei milsa lemeizel bezdin ul'arir b'hadi amaharet. It's disgraceful for such a talmud chacham to present himself in Bezdin up against the amaharet. So this is pretty much like that Ramban, the second Ramban of the Ramban, that we do not allow this antler, but we do allow Shluchei Bezdin to collect the arguments. That's why Paskin, bottom line. Comes along the Sma. The Sma says the reason why we don't allow a Nitva to use a Shliach is because he himself has the Chazak, like we mentioned. Ein meiz l'ton davar sheker b'fnei mi shechayev lo. He won't lie. But a shliach would lie, so that's why it's not allowed. But in contrast to that, the Sma says, and this is meduyik in the Shulchan Aruch, about the toveya, the bank, he can apply a marasha. Now, there are two reasons why a toveya can appoint a shliach. Number one is, the Toveya is not working with the Chazaka anyways. He's not working with an Eid Adam Chazaka, Eid Adam Meis, Panim B'fnei, Baal Chov. He is the Baal Chov. There's no lying or not lying. He's owed money. So the same Nemanus he has will apply to the Shliach as well. Again, from the Nitfa's perspective, he did a favor for me. I'm not going to lie to the guy's face. He gave me $1,000. I won't lie. But Shliach, I point, no favor was done for him. He could lie. So I'm more believed than my Shliach. But from the Toveya's perspective, the bank, I want to collect my money. So I'm not working with the Chazaka. There's no lying I will do. He didn't do a Tova for me. I want my money back. So there's no difference in me versus a Shliach. Neither one of us received a Tova. So there's no Chazaka. Therefore, there's no difference between the Toveya, between the Shliach. That's one reason why it's allowed. Excellent. It's a good point. So that might. It's a great, excellent question. I'm not sure the answer. Excellent question. Why would they not wipe out his? So it may have to be that the Taveya may have to be present there, but he could allow the Shliach to make the arguments for him. So this way the Nitva cannot argue back because the Taveya is there. Don't lie to my face. But allow the Shliach to make his arguments. Excellent. Now the second reason why we allow the Toveya to point to Shliach is because he now invokes this different type of Shliach. We said there are three types of Shluchim. There's the antler, which in my understanding is, he just goes and takes control of the Kohen Gadol's dealings. The second type is a Shliach, who is perhaps representing me and has my tainas all put together. But then there's this third category, the Marasha, whereby I said, listen, I'll make a deal with you. I'll give you 10%, you win the deal, you make money off yourself. So now he's representing himself. He's no longer considered a third party. He's one of the primary parties here. That sounds a bit strange because it doesn't sound very nice. It sounds like there's some business dealing that's going on here, which is true. But in the end of the day, it's hard to argue on this because in the end of the day, he's making money. He's defending himself as well. And that makes it, but it doesn't sound very yasher. Unfortunately, things that go on in the Beis Din are oftentimes not so yasher. A lot of the Bati Dinim are not so yasher. I don't know the different ones. I don't care to know the different ones. But a lot of strange stuff go on. This is the Baal Ma'arin according to the Sma. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan, we'll finish with this Aruch HaShulchan. I'll finish with a couple of interesting stories to get the point across. Aruch HaShulchan writes, even though the Shulchan Aruch is very, very strong, and he says that we don't allow the Nitva to appoint a Shliach, V'chol Zeh Medina, that's all according to Halacha L'maisa. V'al Achshav HaMinag B'chol Batei Dinim, he writes, Shegam HaNitva Ma'amin Marasha V'chol Shekein HaTaveya. And since the practice is we allow them to have a marasha, a toin, whatever you call them, it's the widely accepted practice, similar to what the Ramban said, although he thought it was inappropriate to use a shliach, but from the times of the Rif, this was acceptable, therefore, that is the practice. So we see that the minhag goes against the halacha. Halacha l'maisa, we allow for a toin. I know a certain case that happened recently, that there's a predicted toin who is incredibly disrespectful to the dayanim. And Dayanim said, we are no longer accepting Tuanim. I don't know if they, Lamaisa, are going through with that. But Tuanim are known to cause a lot of problems. So as I mentioned before, Ravashi Wai says that they do cause problems, but you have to be very strong with them. You have to know how to deal with them. You have to put them in their place. So if you have a Dayan who's very soft, so Tuanim could really put the Dayan in his place. Many Dayanim could be very soft. You know, they're sitting in the base medrash, they know Choshe Mishpat backwards and forwards, and they're like good midos, and they're not very strong-minded. So it comes in a towing, a lawyer who knows stuff well, he could give a dying a hard time. Rashi Weiss Baruch Hashem, is a strong willpower, he's a dominant force, and there's no standing up to Rashi Weiss. So he could put them in place. If you have a dying who's a little soft, it can be very, very difficult. There's a lot of tension that goes on sometimes with the dying and the towing. But Lach Lamaisa, from the Aruch HaShulchan, even though the Shulchan Aruch did not really like this, he paskined, you'd be allowed to based on this concept, this minhag. Let me just share two powerful stories about the importance of a minhag overriding halacha. One time, a shaila came to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and they found the Sefer Torah. But they did not know who the sofer of the Sefer Torah was, who authored this. Some of you from last year see nodding your heads. I've shared this in the past. So you like this story? Good, excellent. So that's what my daughter's teachers always say. They tell me that if you know the story, just nod your head. Right? Don't say, oh, I know the story already. So just nod your head. So Rav Akiva Eiger was once asked to Shaila about a certain Sefer Torah. They didn't know who was the Sofer. Who cares who the Sofer was? It's a good Sefer Torah. It's a kosher Sefer Torah. Not true. Because the Gemara in Gittin tells us that if the sofer was a tzaduki, a min, apikoros of some sort, the din is you'd have to burn the Sefer Torah. You couldn't use the Sefer Torah. It's a Mefurish Gemara in Gittin. So it's very important to know. If a conservative sofer wrote it, perhaps we have to burn the Sefer Torah. If it was someone who's orthodox, of course you'd use it. So who authored the Sefer Torah? They have no idea. So Rav Akiva Eiger says, take a look at the last few psukim. And if all the letters of the last few psukim are exactly the same font and script as the rest of the Sefer Torah, then you could burn it. But if they are all different, which means that the sofer invited, according to the minhag, invited all the local rabbanim to participate and write their own letter. Back then, they used to write their own letters. Nowadays, like you could like hold his elbow if you're lucky. Usually, it's like, okay, thanks, you be my shliach. And you put that pen up. But you know, once in a while, I was actually asked a few months ago. I was given the right to fill in the letter. It was a very chashuv thing. I said, no, thank you. You don't want to be the guy to like spill the ink all over and ruin it. And they could fix it. They could scratch. It's not a big deal. Comes to Sefer Torah, but so once in a while you get asked if you want to fill in the oath, but back then they actually wrote the whole oath. So then the Rabbanim knew how to write. They knew Safras. So he said, if every letter at the last few psukim are different, that means the sofer followed the minug and he invited the Rabbanim and it was acceptable. But if they were all the same as the rest of the Sefer Torah was all the same letters, that means he did not follow this minug and it would be puzzle and you would burn the Sefer Torah. And that's how important Minhagim is. The second story is the Ramah. You look throughout the Ramah on Shulchan Aruch, he's always saying, V'chein anu nogin, v'chein anu minhag, ein anu nogin. It's always that Minhagim, Minhagim, Minhagim. Why is that? So tradition has it, Ramah became the Rav of the shul in Krakow. There's a very odd Minhag that was there. The Minhag was that after a woman gives birth, so she goes to the mikveh, it's around 6 weeks. And that week she goes to the mikvah. So the minhag in Krakow was that the mikvah lady tells the gabbai that the lady went to the mikvah, and now you should make sure that her husband gets an aliyah that week. So the husband gets an aliyah that week, and everybody knows that, oh, his wife went to the mikvah this week, which is entirely inappropriate. No one needs to know when she's going to the mikvah. So he abolished that minhag. Fine, first Shabbos comes. And there was a guy whose wife, just had given birth a few weeks earlier, and she had went to the mikvah that week, and he comes to shul. He doesn't get the aliyah. He was away for the Shabbos before, and he missed that they abolished this minhag. He was unaware, so he got very, very insulted that they didn't call him up for the aliyah. His wife went to the mikvah this week. Why wasn't he getting an aliyah? So he did a little research, and turns out his wife actually never went to the mikvah, even though she had told him. She went to the mikvah. And the Ramah understood the reason why the minhag was in place is because apparently the women were not so trusted to go to the mikvah. The only way to keep them in check, the only way there's oversight, was for the mikvah lady to report back to the gabbai that she went to the mikvah. But the moment the Ramah abolished this minhag, nobody was reporting. So the husband trusted the wife that she went to the mikvah, but she didn't really go to the mikvah. It was the mikvah lady whose job was to tell the gabbai. And they lost that oversight. The Ramah realized he made a huge mistake. And therefore, from that point on, he dedicated the rest of his life, pretty much, to keeping minhagim, explaining minhagim, v'chei nagu, even though Allah might say something different, v'chei nagu, because you never know the reason behind a minhag. If it became a minhag yisrael toru, it must be for a reason that you may not even know. We try to figure out reasons, we try to understand minhagim all the time, but even if we don't understand the minhagim, we have to keep them in place because we see what happened if not. So based on this, we see the importance of minhagim. So in conclusion, what comes out based on the sugya of the antler and the shliach and the marasha, even though there are concerns of taino shasheker and the concerns of who the shua is going to be made, in the end of the day, we paskin based on the minhag that one can use a shliach. Okay, shkoyach everyone.